Forgotten Classics, where a good story never goes out of style.
Hello, everyone. I'm Julie, and here we have episode 183 of Forgotten Classics. Back to Genesis. Close to the end. But not quite there yet. But before we dive back into Joseph, his coat of many colors, and all his brothers in the land of Egypt, let's talk about a podcast highlight. And actually, I have two podcast highlights for you because they go hand in hand. Lately, I'd been looking around for some basic music. The kind of thing where they're going to play, I guess you'd say, middle of the road, classic sort of things that I could just pop on and have on around the house without having to choose a playlist of my own. Yeah, I want my own radio station. Deal with it. Anyway, one of the things I was looking for was classical music, and I have looked many a time and not really found anything. But this time through, I found something called Afternoon Classical, and it's from the Sioux City, Iowa public radio station called KWIT. It's an hour of classic recordings. You're going to find things from practically every day. You know, you've got Mozart, Bach, Beethoven, Tchaikovsky, and a few others thrown in there just to keep things lively. They have a minimum of talking. They just play the music, and you can put it all in a playlist and just let it go. I love it. So at the same time when I was looking around for all this classical stuff, I came across the San Francisco Symphony podcasts. Now, usually if a symphony has podcasts, they're busy introducing a guest, interviewing conductors. Well, I don't care about that. But this one is different. Each one is about 8 to 10 minutes long. They call it program notes. So what it means is they're looking at a major piece of music that they're going to present or play during their symphony season and talking about it to give the listener some context. Well, this is great because they're not focusing on themselves, or if they are, it's fairly minimal. They're talking about the composer, the piece in the context of composing at the time, the piece in terms of what was different or unusual or classic about it, what made it emblematic of that particular composer. So when you're listening to someone talk about a Mozart symphony and bringing up the fact that this features the clarinet a lot because the clarinet was becoming the instrument we know today, and it's the up-and-coming new instrument, so it's being used a lot, you suddenly have a new view of the symphony, which is music, considering it's Mozart, that we all know fairly well. But suddenly you see, he was making it trendy. He was making it new. And then when they talk about the fact that he was adding in as much clarinet work as possible because his best friend was a major clarinetist, if that's a right word, you have a whole nother personal context for it. And that's not all, obviously, for them to talk for 10 minutes, but they'll play snippets of the music, give you a really good overview of the piece of music, so it just enhances it. And something I forgot to mention for the KWIT Afternoon Classical podcast is that they will feature one major classical piece of work, and they may have a few smaller ones to fill in the hour by the same artist. So chances are that you will be able to mesh together some of the San Francisco Symphony information with some of the afternoon classical symphonies that you may be hearing. Fascinating. And either of those are good if you're going to your local symphony to give you more appreciation for what you're hearing. And in fact, I have to say, in my case, it's working. It's making me want to check out our local symphony here. So, well done, both of you. I just hope your local audiences appreciate this as much as I do. At any rate, for the rest of us, if you like classical music at all, and you aren't up to the date on every single detail, check both of those out. Now, back to Genesis. Last time, the brothers had gone, brought back Benjamin, as per Joseph's command, and poor Judah was busy defending them and explaining everything to Joseph, who was testing them basically to see if their hearts had changed. And you know what we want to know? We want to know, what does Joseph think about all this? We've seen him kind of turn aside or go apart to kind of cry a little and let his emotions out, because of course this is hugely important and he can't contain himself, understandably so. But what's he going to say to his brothers? When's he going to let the cat out of the bag? Well, coming up, here and now on Forgotten Classics, all is revealed. Are you ready? I know, me too. Let's dive in, and I'll meet you on the other side. Genesis, translation and commentary by Robert Alter, published by W.W. Norton. This book is under copyright with all rights reserved. Go to the episode show notes for contact information concerning this book. Many thanks to Robert Alter and his publisher for granting Forgotten Classics the non-exclusive rights to read this work. Chapter 45. And Joseph could no longer hold himself in check before all who stood attendance upon him, and he cried, "Clear out, everyone around me!" And no man stood with him when Joseph made himself known to his brothers. And he wept aloud, and the Egyptians heard, and the house of Pharaoh heard. And Joseph said to his brothers, "I am Joseph. Is my father still alive?" But his brothers could not answer him, for they were dismayed before him. And Joseph said to his brothers, "Come close to me, pray." And they came close, and he said, "I am Joseph, your brother, whom you sold into Egypt. And now do not be pained, and do not be incensed with yourself that you sold me down here, because for sustenance God has sent me before you. 2 years now there has been famine in the heart of the land, and there are yet 5 years without plowing and harvest. And God has sent me before you to make you a remnant on earth and to preserve life, for you to be a great surviving group. And so, it is not you who sent me here, but God. And he has made me father to Pharaoh and lord of all his house and ruler over all the land of Egypt. Hurry and go to my father and say to him, 'Thus says your son Joseph, God has made me lord to all Egypt. Come down to me, do not delay.' And you shall dwell in the land of Goshen and shall be close to me, you and your sons and the sons of your sons and your flocks and your cattle and all that is yours. And I will sustain you there, for yet 5 years of famine remain, lest you lose all, you and your household and all that is yours. And look, your own eyes can see, and the eyes of my brother Benjamin, that it is my very mouth that speaks to you. And you must tell my father all my glory in Egypt, and all that you have seen, and hurry, and bring my father down here." And he fell upon the neck of his brother Benjamin, and he wept. And Benjamin wept on his neck. And he kissed all his brothers and wept over them. And after that, his brothers spoke to him. And the news was heard in the house of Pharaoh, saying, "Joseph's brothers have come." And it was good in Pharaoh's eyes, and in his servants' eyes. And Pharaoh said to Joseph, "Say to your brothers, 'This now do, load up your beasts and go, return to the land of Canaan, and take your father and your households and come back to me, that I may give you the best of the land of Egypt, and you shall live off the fat of the land. And you, command them, this now do, take you from the land of Egypt wagons for your little ones and for your wives, and convey your father and come, and regret not your belongings, for the best of all the land of Egypt is yours.'" And so the sons of Israel did, and Joseph gave them wagons, as Pharaoh had ordered, and he gave them supplies for the journey. To all of them, each one, he gave changes of garments. And to Benjamin he gave 300 pieces of silver and 5 changes of garments. And to his father he sent as follows: 10 donkeys conveying from the best of Egypt, and 10 she-asses conveying grain and bread and food for his father for the journey. And he sent off his brothers, and they went. And he said to them, do not be perturbed on the journey. And they went up from Egypt, and they came to the land of Canaan to Jacob their father. And they told him, saying, Joseph is still alive, and that he was the ruler in all the land of Egypt. And his heart stopped, for he did not believe them. And they spoke to him all the words of Joseph that he had spoken to them. And he saw the wagons that Joseph had sent to convey him, and the spirit of Jacob their father revived. And Israel said, Enough! Joseph, my son, is still alive. Let me go see him before I die. Chapter 46. And Israel journeyed onward with all that was his. And he came to Beersheba, and he offered sacrifices to the God of his father Isaac. And God said to Israel through visions of the night, Jacob, Jacob. And he said, Here I am. And he said, I am the God, God of your father. Fear not to go down to Egypt, for a great nation I will make you there. I myself will go down with you to Egypt, and I myself will surely bring you back up as well, and Joseph shall lay his hand on your eyes. And Jacob arose from Beersheba, and the sons of Israel conveyed Jacob their father, and their little ones, and their wives in the wagons Pharaoh had sent to convey him. And they took their cattle, and their substance that they had gotten in the land of Canaan, and they came to Egypt, Jacob and all his seed with him, his sons and the sons of his sons with him, his daughters and the daughters of his sons, and all his seed he brought with him to Egypt. And these are the names of the children of Israel who came to Egypt, Jacob and his sons, Jacob's firstborn Reuben, and the sons of Reuben, Enoch and Pallu and Hezron and Carmi, and the sons of Simeon, Jemuel and Jamin and Ohad and Jachin and Zohar and Saul, the son of the Canaanite woman, and the sons of Levi, Gershon, Kohath, and Merari, and the sons of Judah, Ir and Onan and Shelah and Perez and Zerah, and Ur and Onan died in the land of Canaan. And the sons of Perez were Hezron and Hamul, and the sons of Issachar, Tola and Puva and Eob and Shimron, and the sons of Zebulun, Serid and Elon and Jalil. And these are the sons of Leah, whom she bore to Jacob in Padan Aram, and also Dinah his daughter, every person of his sons and daughters, 33. And the sons of God, Ziphion and Haggai, Shuni and Isban, Iri and Arodi and Areli. And the sons of Asher, Imnah and Ishva and Ishvi and Beriah and Sirah, their sister. And the sons of Beriah, Heber and Malkiel. These are the sons of Zilpah, whom Laban gave to Leah his daughter, and she bore these to Jacob, 16 persons. The sons of Rachel, Jacob's wife, Joseph and Benjamin. And to Joseph were born in the land of Egypt, daughter of Potipherah, priest of On, bore to him Manasseh and Ephraim. And the sons of Benjamin, Bela and Becher and Ashbel, Gera and Naaman, Ehi and Rosh, Muppim and Huppim and Ard. These are the sons of Rachel, who were born to Jacob, 14 persons in all. The sons of Dan, Hushim, and the sons of Naphtali, Jazil and Guni and Jizir and Shilem. These are the sons of Bilhah, whom Laban gave to Rachel his daughter, and she bore these to Jacob, 7 persons in all. All the persons who came with Jacob to Egypt, issue of his loins, aside from the wives of Jacob's sons, 66 persons in all. And the sons of Jacob who were born to him in Egypt were 2 persons. All the persons of the household of Jacob coming to Egypt were 70. And Judah he had sent before him to show the way to Goshen, and they came to the land of Goshen. And Joseph harnessed his chariot and went up to meet Israel, his father in Goshen, and appeared before him and fell on his neck, and he wept on his neck a long while. And Israel said, I may die now after seeing your face, for you are still alive. And Joseph said to his brothers and to his father's household, Let me go up and tell Pharaoh, and let me say to him, My brothers and my father's household that was in the land of Canaan have come to me, and the men are shepherds, for they have always been handlers of livestock, and their sheep and their cattle and all that is theirs they have brought. And so when Pharaoh calls for you and says, What is it you do? You should say, Your servants have been handlers of livestock from our youth until now, we and our fathers as well, that you may dwell in the land of Goshen. For every shepherd is abhorrent to Egypt. Now we will hear Genesis with Robert Alter's translation and commentary notes. Chapter 45. And Joseph could no longer hold himself in check before all who stood attendance upon him, and he cried, Clear out, everyone around me! And no man stood with him when Joseph made himself known to his brothers. And he wept aloud, and the Egyptians heard, and the house of Pharaoh heard. Footnote. And he wept aloud. The Hebrew says literally, And he gave his voice in weeping. This is the third climactic weeping of Joseph. Now he no longer turns aside to weep in secret, but sobs uncontrollably in the presence of his brothers, so audibly that he is heard by the Egyptians outside and heard all the way to the palace of Pharaoh. As in English, house may refer either to the physical structure or to the people associated with it. End footnote. And Joseph said to his brothers, I am Joseph. Is my father still alive? Footnote. I am Joseph. Is my father still alive? His very first utterance, after his sobs have subsided, is the essential revelation of identity, a two-word, in the Hebrew, bombshell tossed at his brothers. He follows this by asking whether his father is alive, as though he could not altogether trust the assurances they had given him about this when he questioned them in his guise of Egyptian viceroy. His repeated reference to my father serves double duty. The first person singular possessive expresses his sense of personal connection with old Jacob. He is, after all, my father, he is saying to his brothers. But it is also the idiomatic usage for the familiar father in biblical Hebrew, rather like Abba, apostrophe A-B-B-A, in Aramaic and later Hebrew. End footnote. But his brothers could not answer him, for they were dismayed before him. And Joseph said to his brothers, Come close to me, pray. And they came close, and he said, I am Joseph, your brother, whom you sold into Egypt. Footnotes. And Joseph said to his brothers, Come close to me, pray. The purblindness to which a mechanical focus on source criticism can lead is nowhere more vividly illustrated than in the contention of some critics that this verse reflects a different source from the preceding verse because it is a doublet of it. What should be obvious is that this repeated speech is a brilliant realization of the dramatic moment. When Joseph first reveals himself to his brothers, they are quite understandably dismayed, and so he must speak again, first by asking them to draw close. The proposal of the Midrash, Bereshit Rabbah, is that he invites them to come close in order to show them that he is circumcised, is of course fanciful, but the closing of physical space does reflect his sense that he must somehow bridge the enormous distance he has maintained between himself and them in his Egyptian persona. I am Joseph, your brother, whom you sold into Egypt. The qualifying clause Joseph now adds to his initial, I am Joseph, is surely a heart-stopper for the brothers and could be construed as the last, inadvertent, gesture of his test of them. Their most dire imaginings of retribution could easily follow from these words, but instead Joseph immediately proceeds in the next sentence to reassure them. And footnotes. And now do not be pained, and do not be incensed with yourself that you sold me down here, because for sustenance God has sent me before you. Footnotes. Do not be incensed with yourselves. The literal Hebrew wording is, let it not be incensed in your eyes. For sustenance God has sent me before you. Joseph's speech is a luminous illustration of the Bible's double system of causation, human and divine. Commentators have tended to tilt the balance to one side, making Joseph a mouthpiece of piety here. His recognition of a providential plan may well be admirable from the viewpoint of monotheistic faith, but there is no reason to assume that Joseph has lost the sense of his own brilliant initiative in all that he has accomplished. And so when he says God, Elohim, apostrophe E-L-O-H-I-M, which could also suggest something more general like providence or fate, he also means Joseph. Before you is the first intimation that he intends the whole clan to come down to Egypt after him. And footnotes. 2 years now there has been famine in the heart of the land, and there are yet 5 years without plowing and harvest. And God has sent me before you to make you a remnant on earth and to preserve life, for you to be a great surviving group. And so, it is not you who sent me here, but God. And he has made me father to Pharaoh and lord of all his house and ruler over all the land of Egypt. Footnote. Father to Pharaoh. The obvious meaning of father is authority, and there are biblical parallels for this sense of the term. It is a matter of debate among specialists whether the term also reflects an actual Egyptian administrative title. Joseph's characterization of his political power moves outward through concentric circles from Pharaoh to the court, all his house, to the whole land of Egypt. End footnote. Hurry and go to my father and say to him, thus says your son Joseph, God has made me lord to all Egypt. Come down to me, do not delay. And you shall dwell in the land of Goshen and shall be close to me, you and your sons and the sons of your sons and your flocks and your cattle and all that is yours. And I will sustain you there, for yet 5 years of famine remain, lest you lose all, you and your household and all that is yours. Footnotes. Thus says your son Joseph. This is the so-called messenger formula that is regularly used in biblical Hebrew as a kind of salutation to introduce letters or orally conveyed messages. The land of Goshen. Land here obviously means a region, not a country. The area referred to is the rich pasture land of the Nile Delta, which would also be close to the border of the Sinai. In historical fact, Semitic nomads from the Sinai were granted permission by the Egyptian government to graze their flocks in this region. Lest you lose all. The Hebrew verb here has often been confused with another one, with which it shares two consonants, meaning to become poor. The literal meaning of the verb used by Joseph is to be inherited, that is, to lose all of one's possessions, either through bankruptcy or by being conquered by an enemy. End footnotes. And look, your own eyes can see, and the eyes of my brother Benjamin, that it is my very mouth that speaks to you. And you must tell my father all my glory in Egypt, and all that you have seen, and hurry and bring my father down here. Footnote. It is my very mouth that speaks to you. As Ibn Ezra nicely observed, until the crucial moment when Joseph said, clear out everyone around me, all his communications with the brothers would have been through an interpreter, as we were reminded in chapter 42, verse 23. Now he has been speaking to them directly in their native Hebrew, a fact they may have barely assimilated in their dumbfounded condition, and of which he reminds them now at the end of his speech as confirmation of his identity. End footnote. And he fell upon the neck of his brother Benjamin, and he wept. And Benjamin wept on his neck. And he kissed all his brothers and wept over them. And after that, his brothers spoke to him. Footnote. It is my very mouth that speaks to you. As Ibn Ezra nicely observed, until the crucial moment when Joseph said, "Clear out everyone around me," all his communications with the brothers would have been through an interpreter, as we were reminded in chapter 42, verse 23. Now he has been speaking to them directly in their native Hebrew, a fact they may have barely assimilated in their dumbfounded condition, and of which he reminds them now at the end of his speech as confirmation of his identity. End footnote. And the news was heard in the house of Pharaoh, saying, "Joseph's brothers have come." And it was good in Pharaoh's eyes, and in his servants' eyes. And Pharaoh said to Joseph, "Say to your brothers, this now do, load up your beasts and go, return to the land of Canaan, and take your father and your households and come back to me, that I may give you the best of the land of Egypt, and you shall live off the fat of the land, and you command them, this now do, take you from the land of Egypt wagons for your little ones and for your wives, and convey your father and come. And regret not your belongings, for the best of all the land of Egypt is yours." Footnotes. The best of the land of Egypt. The source critics have noted an apparent contradiction with Joseph's instructions, which are to settle specifically in the region of Goshen, unless one construes the best of the land as a reference to that fertile area, something supported by chapter 47, verse 11. Live off the fat of the land. The Hebrew says literally, eat the fat of the land. And you command them. The Masoretic text has, "and you," singular, "are commanded," which is a little incoherent in light of what follows. Both the Septuagint and the Vulgate read, "command them." Evidently, Joseph is enjoined by Pharaoh to transmit this royal directive to his brothers, conferring special status on their clan, Nahum Sarna. Regret not your belongings. The literal meaning of the Hebrew idiom used is, "let not your eye spare." End footnotes. And so the sons of Israel did, and Joseph gave them wagons, as Pharaoh had ordered, and he gave them supplies for the journey. To all of them, each one, he gave changes of garments, and to Benjamin he gave 300 pieces of silver and 5 changes of garments. And to his father he sent as follows, 10 donkeys conveying from the best of Egypt, and 10 she-asses conveying grain and bread and food for his father for the journey. Footnotes. As Pharaoh had ordered. This reflects the Hebrew locution that means literally, according to Pharaoh's mouth. He gave changes of garments, and to Benjamin he gave 300 pieces of silver. The bestowal of garments, as Nahum Sarna notes, is a kind of antithetical response to Joseph's having been stripped of his garment. The regal amount of silver given to Benjamin is the final gesture of restitution for the 20 pieces of silver the brothers took for the sale of Joseph. As follows. Because a whole list of items is being introduced, the narrator announces it with kezot, K-E-Z-O apostrophe T, a term prefaced to catalogs or inventories. End footnotes. And he sent off his brothers, and they went. And he said to them, "Do not be perturbed on the journey." Footnote. Do not be perturbed on the journey. There has been some dispute about the meaning of the verb here. It is occasionally used in contexts that associate it with anger, and so many interpreters have imagined that Joseph is warning his brothers not to yield to mutual recrimination and perhaps fall to blows on the way home. But the primary meaning of the verb is to quake or to shake, either physically, as a mountain in an earthquake, or emotionally, as a person trembling with fear. And it is the antonym of being tranquil or at peace. In all likelihood, Joseph is reassuring his brothers that they need not fear any lurking residue of vengefulness on his part that would turn the journey homeward into a trap. End footnote. And they went up from Egypt, and they came to the land of Canaan to Jacob their father. And they told him, saying, Joseph is still alive, and that he was the ruler in all the land of Egypt. And his heart stopped, for he did not believe them. Footnote, and his heart stopped. Translations like, his heart fainted, King James Version, his heart was numb, Spicer and New Jewish Publication Society, he was stunned, Revised English Bible, blunt the force of the original. The Hebrew verb plainly means to stop, or more precisely, to intermit. Judah had warned that the loss of Benjamin would kill the old man. Now the tremendous shock of this news about Joseph, which at first he cannot believe. Does he imagine his less than trustworthy sons are perpetuating a cruel hoax? Induces a physical syncope. End footnote. And they spoke to him all the words of Joseph that he had spoken to them. And he saw the wagons that Joseph had sent to convey him, and the spirit of Jacob their father revived. Footnote. And they spoke to him all the words of Joseph, and he saw the wagons. Joseph's incredulity begins to yield to the circumstantial account of Joseph's own story that his sons give him. Then he fully registers the presence of the wagons, which would have been oxen-drawn vehicles of a distinctive Egyptian design that would not normally be seen in Canaan, and that mere foreign buyers of grain would surely not be able to obtain. At this point, his spirit revived, that is, came back to life. He emerges from the state of temporary heart failure or heart pause triggered by the astounding report. One should note that the only hint of direct discourse given to the brothers in this scene is, Joseph is still alive. Just three words, four syllables in the Hebrew. The effect is to keep them in the background, even though they are actually speaking to Jacob. Joseph looms in the foreground in the first half of the chapter, as does Jacob, the father from whom he has been so long separated, in the second half. End footnote. And Israel said, Enough! Joseph, my son, is still alive. Let me go see him before I die. Footnote. Joseph, my son, is still alive. Let me go see him before I die. The wonderful poignancy of these words should not deflect us from noting that Jacob is again invoking a kind of self-defining motif. Ever since Joseph's disappearance 22 years earlier in narrated time, he has been talking about going down to the grave. By now, he has in fact attained advanced old age, see chapter 47, verse 9, and so the idea that he has little time left is quite reasonable. The brief seizure he has just undergone is, of course, evidence of his physical frailty. Jacob's story, like David's, is virtually unique in ancient literature in its searching representation of the radical transformations a person undergoes in the slow course of time. The powerful young man who made his way across the Jordan to Mesopotamia with only his walking staff, who wrestled with stones and men and divine beings, is now an old man tottering on the brink of the grave, bearing the deep wounds of his long life. End footnote, and end of chapter 45. Chapter 46. And Israel journeyed onward with all that was his. And he came to Beersheba, and he offered sacrifices to the God of his father Isaac. Footnote, and Israel journeyed onward. The choice of the verb is a little surprising, as one might have expected something like, he arose and set out, or he went forth. It seems likely that this particular verb, with its etymological background of pulling up tent pegs and moving from one encampment to another, is intended to signal that the beginning of the sojourn in Egypt is to be construed as a resumption of the nomadic existence that characterized the lives of Abraham and Isaac. Thus, the clan of Jacob does not head down to Egypt as a permanent place of immigration, but as a way station in its continued wanderings. End footnote. And God said to Israel through visions of the night, Jacob, Jacob. And he said, Here I am. Footnote. Jacob, Jacob, here I am. This is an exact parallel, as Amos Funkenstein has observed to me, to the exchange between God and Abraham at the beginning of the story of the binding of Isaac. Perhaps there is a suggestion that the sojourn in Egypt is also an ordeal, with an ultimately happy ending. End footnote. And he said, I am the God, God of your father. Fear not to go down to Egypt, for a great nation I will make you there. I myself will go down with you to Egypt, and I myself will surely bring you back up as well, and Joseph shall lay his hand on your eyes. Footnotes. Fear not, for a great nation I will make you. Both the language and the action of this whole scene are framed as an emphatic recapitulation of the earlier patriarchal tales now that they are coming to an end as the last of the patriarchs with his offspring leaves Canaan for the long stay in Egypt. Jacob, traveling south from Hebron, stops at Beersheba, where his father built an altar, and offers sacrifice just as both Isaac and Abraham did. God appears to him and speaks to him, as he did to Abraham and Isaac. The language of the dream vision strongly echoes the language of the covenantal promises to Jacob's father and grandfather. I myself will go down with you. The first person pronoun is emphatic because God uses the pronoun Anoki, apostrophe A-N-O-K-H-I, which is not strictly necessary, followed as it is by the imperfect tense of the verb conjugated in the first person singular. The reassurance God offers, which is already the kernel of a theological concept that will play an important role in the national consciousness, both in the Babylonian exile and after the defeat by the Romans in 70 CE, is necessary because in the polytheistic view, the theater of activity of a deity was typically imagined to be limited to the territorial borders of the deity's worshippers. By contrast, this god promises solemnly to go down with his people to Egypt and to bring them back up. Joseph shall lay his hand on your eyes. The reference is to closing the eyes at the moment of death. End footnotes. And Jacob arose from Beersheba, and the sons of Israel conveyed Jacob their father, and their little ones, and their wives in the wagons Pharaoh had sent to convey him. And they took their cattle, and their substance that they had gotten in the land of Canaan, and they came to Egypt, Jacob and all his seed with him, his sons and the sons of his sons with him, his daughters and the daughters of his sons, and all his seed he brought with him to Egypt. Footnotes. And the sons of Israel conveyed Jacob their father. The repeated stress in the previous chapter and in this one on conveying or carrying Jacob, together with the women and children, reminds us that he is very old and infirm, no longer an active participant in the journey. His sons and the sons of his sons. This last verse of the narrative report of the departure for Egypt becomes an apt transition to the genealogy, purposefully inserted at this point from what scholarly consensus deems a different literary source. End footnotes. And these are the names of the children of Israel who came to Egypt: Jacob and his sons, Jacob's firstborn Reuben, and the sons of Reuben, Enoch and Pallu and Hezron and Carmi, and the sons of Simeon, Jemuel and Jamin and Ohad and Jachin and Zohar and Saul, the son of the Canaanite woman, and the sons of Levi, Gershon, Kohath, and Merari, and the sons of Judah, Ir and Onan and Shelah and Perez and Zerah, and Ur and Onan died in the land of Canaan. And the sons of Perez were Hezron and Hamul, and the sons of Issachar, Tola and Puva and Eob and Shimron, and the sons of Zebulun, Sirid and Elon and Jalil. And these are the sons of Leah, whom she bore to Jacob in Padan Aram, and also Dinah his daughter, every person of his sons and daughters, 33. And the sons of God, Ziphion and Haggai, Shuni and Isban, Iri and Arodi and Areli. And the sons of Asher, Imnah and Ishva and Ishvi and Beria and Sirah, their sister. And the sons of Beriah, Heber and Malkiel. These are the sons of Zilpah, whom Laban gave to Leah his daughter, and she bore these to Jacob, 16 persons. The sons of Rachel, Jacob's wife, Joseph and Benjamin. And to Joseph were born in the land of Egypt, daughter of Potipherah, priest of On, bore to him Manasseh and Ephraim. And the sons of Benjamin, Bela and Becher and Ashbel, Gira and Naaman, Ehi and Rosh, Mupim and Hupim and Ard. These are the sons of Rachel, who were born to Jacob, 14 persons in all. The sons of Dan, Hushim, and the sons of Naphtali, Jazil and Guni and Jezir and Shilem. These are the sons of Bilhah, whom Laban gave to Rachel his daughter, and she bore these to Jacob, 7 persons in all. All the persons who came with Jacob to Egypt, issue of his loins, aside from the wives of Jacob's sons, 66 persons in all. And the sons of Jacob who were born to him in Egypt were 2 persons. All the persons of the household of Jacob coming to Egypt were 70. Footnotes. Once again, the genealogical list is used to effect closure at the end of a large narrative unit. The tales of the patriarchs in the land of Canaan are now concluded, and as Jacob and his clan journey southward for the sojourn in Egypt, we are given an inventory of his offspring, a large family already exhibiting in embryo the configuration of the future tribes of Israel. The sons of Dan, Hushim. Only one son is mentioned, but this need not reflect a contradiction in the text, as the sons of may be a fixed formula for each new item in the list. All the persons of the household of Jacob coming to Egypt were 70. The traditional commentators resort to interpretive acrobatics in order to make the list come out to exactly 70, debating as to whether Jacob himself should be included in the count, whether Joseph and his 2 sons are part of the sum, and so forth. In fact, the insistence on 70 at the end of the list vividly illustrates the biblical use of numbers as symbolic approximations rather than as arithmetically precise measures. 70 is a fullness, a large round number, 10 times sacred 7, and its use here indicates that Jacob, once a solitary fugitive, has grown to a grand family, the nucleus of a nation. End footnotes. And Judah he had sent before him to show the way to Goshen, and they came to the land of Goshen. Footnote. And Judah he had sent before him to show him the way. Judah, who pledged to guarantee Benjamin's safety, and from whose descendants the royal line will spring, is now Jacob's choice as guide for the rest. The phrase, to show him the way, is a little odd in the Hebrew. There are 2 variant readings reflected in the ancient versions, and its meaning is not entirely certain. End footnote. And Joseph harnessed his chariot and went up to meet Israel, his father in Goshen, and appeared before him and fell on his neck, and he wept on his neck a long while. And Israel said, I may die now after seeing your face, for you are still alive. Footnotes. And Joseph harnessed his chariot. The specification of the vehicle is another strategic reminder of the Egyptian accoutrement Joseph employs as a matter of course, even as he hurries to meet his father, who comes from a world where there are neither chariots nor wagons. Realistically, harnessed, as Ibn Ezra and many others have noted, would mean he gave orders to harness. Nevertheless, there is thematic point in the sense of immediacy conveyed by the transitive verb with Joseph as subject, and Rashi registers this point, even if his construal is too literal when he says, he himself harnessed the horses to the chariot in order to make haste in honor of his father. And appeared before him. This is a slightly odd phrase, since it is more typically used for the appearance of God before a human. Perhaps the sight of the long-lost Joseph in Egyptian royal raiment, riding in his chariot, is a kind of epiphany for Jacob. In any case, appearing before accords with Jacob's own emphasis on seeing Joseph's face. And fell on his neck, and he wept on his neck a long while. The absence of reciprocal weeping on the part of Jacob can scarcely be attributed to ellipses or inadvertent narrative omission, for in the identically worded report of Joseph's falling on Benjamin's neck and weeping, we are told, and Benjamin wept on his neck. We are invited to imagine, then, a sobbing Joseph who embraces his father while the old man stands dry-eyed, perhaps even rigid, too overcome with feeling to know how to respond or to be able to respond spontaneously, until finally he speaks, once more invoking his own death, but now with a sense of contentment. I may die now after seeing your face, for you are still alive. End footnotes. And Joseph said to his brothers and to his father's household, let me go up and tell Pharaoh, and let me say to him, my brothers and my father's household that was in the land of Canaan have come to me, and the men are shepherds, for they have always been handlers of livestock, and their sheep and their cattle and all that is theirs they have brought. Footnote. Handlers of livestock. The Hebrew phrase, anshi mikne, apostrophe A-N-S-H-E-I-M-I-Q-N-E-H, which occurs only here and in verse 34, literally means men of livestock. It is perhaps influenced by the designation of the brothers as the men at the beginning of the verse. End footnote. And so when Pharaoh calls for you and says, what is it you do? You should say, your servants have been handlers of livestock from our youth until now, we and our fathers as well, that you may dwell in the land of Goshen. For every shepherd is abhorrent to Egypt. Footnote. That you may dwell in the land of Goshen. For every shepherd is abhorrent to Egypt. This claim is puzzling because there is an indication in the next chapter that Pharaoh had his own flocks. See chapter 47, verse 6. And there is no extra biblical evidence that shepherding was a taboo profession among the Egyptians, as the categorical language of the last sentence here appears to suggest. The least convoluted explanation is that the Egyptians, who were by and large sedentary agriculturalists and who had large urban centers, considered the semi-nomadic herdsmen from the north as inferiors, an attitude actually reflected in Egyptian sources, and so preferred to keep them segregated in the pasture region of the Nile Delta, not far from the Sinai border. End footnote, and end of chapter 46. Well, now that is what I call a family reunion. All kinds of emotions from everyone, reactions, lack of reaction due to sheer shock, surprise, and being overcome. I loved the contrast of Jacob from his young, vigorous days to his old, feeble days. I had completely forgotten about the kind of man he used to be until Robert Alter reminded us with his commentary. I don't really have a lot to say because Robert Alter kind of said it all. As I would think of something, he'd be commenting on it. So, where does that leave us? We have four more chapters, chapters 48 through 50, and we will therefore see Joseph and his family get all settled in Egypt and see how it all shakes out. And that will end the book of Genesis. And after that, the Hebrews will be on their way as a nation. The promise, the covenant that God made with Abraham so long ago will be well and truly launched. So, that is not shabby at all when you consider what we've covered, coming from the beginning of the world to that. Next time, though, we will go back to Bridge of Birds, and we will only have a few more times of this interweaving of these two different stories, which will probably be a relief to everyone. I know I will have an easier time reading both when I'm just doing one at a time and I'm not having to kind of mentally switch gears, although I have enjoyed doing both. I don't have any feedback, and I don't really have any news that I can think of. Except that on the personal front, we are looking at adopting a new dog. You know that Zoe was taken by Rose out to LA. We were waiting for a while to make sure that that was all going to work out. And for Rose, it definitely is. It's a little part of home with her, and I think she likes that. And then for Zoe, I know it's working out. She is definitely a one dog family kind of dog. She's happier, calmer. She just can't handle competing with the other dog for the attention. It just puts her on edge. You know, these highly strung beauties, as I've said before, that's her. So that's working out. And I thought of calling our vet, who has a hard luck hounds ministry, so to speak. I guess it's not really a ministry, but their outreach, where if people bring them dogs that they have found, they will keep them and try to get people to adopt them. So I said, hey, that would be a free dog. And the dog I was interested in was not there anymore. And I didn't really have any particular sort of a dog that I cared about, just one that's young enough to want to play, because poor Wash, oh my gosh, he is dying for someone to play with. You know, he's a boxer. They love to play anyway. And I can only chase him around the living room trying to get the ball from him so many times. He loves it. That's the best game in the world. But you know, for me, it's not quite as much fun. And he could do it all day long. So I needed a dog that was young enough to play and big enough to be able to play with an active 75-pound boxer. As we were talking about all this, the main vet came out and said, oh, by the way, there's this dog that I've done this surgery on because somebody had shot at him with a rifle and it shattered his back leg. So he's got this contraption built around the lower half of it after the surgery that looks like a huge scaffolding done with all these metal pins on it. And it will be 4 to 6 weeks before he's healed enough for that to come off. But he's a nice, calm dog. He's a black and tan dog. Looks like he's probably part shepherd and maybe part chow. But he's the kind of dog so far that it seems like I like. He's not really needy. He's appreciative. He likes to be petted, but he's not going to come and beg for it. And he's dying to play. He loves other dogs. So that'll be perfect. We've taken Wash over and taken him for a walk with the other dog, and Wash spent his whole time growling and going, I am the king of this castle, and you are not getting these people. And when we'd stop, he'd plant himself on my foot to go, don't even try. She is mine. So we have a little work to do there. Our plan is, until this dog is okay to come and do a lot of rough and tumble, we'll take Wash over there a couple times a week and take them for walks like that. So by the time he comes over, he'll be acquainted. Although, when we were talking to the main vet about it, wow, sorry, but I just heard this rumble in the sky, and I looked up, and there's this old school, like World War II bomber type plane flying overhead. I do not know what that's all about, but that was crazy. Okay, anyway, back to the story, which is much less interesting than watching that airplane fly across the sky. Anyway, so the main vet said, oh, by the way, we actually donate this surgery to this volunteer group that tries to get these rescue dogs adopted. You're going to have to adopt through them. And I was like, okay, fine. So I went and I filled out the application. And it's not as bad as some of these places that want, you know, your bank history and to interview people as if you're adopting a child. But seriously, they want to do a home visit. And I'm like, I'm telling you, can we just talk on the phone? What is the percentage of people really who are going to be awful to the dogs they adopt? I would contend it's fairly small. And I would also contend anybody of any experience can kind of suss this out without going through a lot of the things. And believe me, when I filled out the application, some of the language, although I believe they were trying to just make themselves clear, it was insulting to the people filling out the applications. It was kind of, you know, in your face, assuming that they were jerks. Oh, self-righteousness. Our age is not a polite one. And when I looked at the pictures of these dogs on their site, you know, they're all fine little dogs, all worth being adopted. But believe me, there are not a lot of raving beauties there. So people who want to adopt these dogs just want to give them good homes. Which makes me think of something that Rose read on Cracked, which was, you know, five things these kind of places need to rethink. Talking about the hoops he had to jump through for this stuff. Oh, brother. But, you know, if it gets to be too much, guess what? The Dallas Animal Shelter probably has a dog we could adopt and save from being killed for about a fourth of the cost of what this place wants to charge us. I'm just saying. But we'll carry it through for the moment and see how it goes, and I will keep you informed. So, if you have any feedback for me, whether it's about adopting dogs, the Book of Genesis, Bridge of Birds, well, anything, news you want me to get out there, you may leave a comment at the blog for the podcast, which is hcforgottenclassics.blogspot.com. My email's in the sidebar there if you'd rather email. It is julie@glyphnet.com, julie@glyphnet.com. You can also leave comments at the Ravelry forum, which is called Forgotten Yarns. And also, you may see the afghan that I just finished knitting. That took me 5 years. Yes, 5 years. I'm not bragging, but I'm not ashamed. I stopped it a lot to do things like knit teddy bears for people who are having babies. So I just have to say, I thought it was 3 years and not five. That was rather a lowering thought, but there you go. It is absolutely gorgeous, and it makes me want to knit my own. In fact, I will put it up on the blog for this podcast so you can see it too without having to try to get into the Ravelry forum. But it is beautiful. And when I said, wow, I want to make one for myself, my husband gave me a look like, are you nuts? Maybe I am. I'm not sure. Maybe I am. And I am now knitting a shawl for my mother, who doesn't listen to this. And in fact, I don't think anyone that listens to this is from my family or knows my mother. So I believe we're safe. And after doing that afghan, which took so long, I feel like I am just speeding through this shawl. It is taking no time at all. I feel like this is a super big accomplishment. So that's fun, too. Let's see. That was more than we cared about, wasn't it? I really went off on a tangent. Oh, yes. I'm happy to read iTunes reviews, naturally. And for anybody who's interested in classic literature, I'm reading Jane Eyre, so I'm talking about that on Goodreads as I read it. Not a lot, because I'm trying not to give a lot away to Scott, who's also on there. But we will be talking about that next week at A Good Story Is Hard to Find. Because believe me, Jane Eyre, oh, the heroine everybody should be emulating. Not like some of these little heroines they write about today. Uh-huh, Hunger Games. Although I liked the book, I am looking at you. But we will say more about that later. In the meantime, have a great week, everyone. And thank you for coming by and spending some time with me and listening to this really, really, really long ago classic that many of us have forgotten. I will talk to you again soon. Bye-bye.